Welcome, Yana. It's a thrill to have you with us on the Book Report.
It's a great pleasure. Nice to be here.
The 12 Tribes of Hatti is set against the backdrop of the Great Migration. Were your ancestors a part of that?
Yes, my own grandparents did leave the South, not Georgia, but they did leave the South in the early part of the 20th century and came to Philadelphia.
Is the title a reference to the 12 Tribes of Israel?
It most certainly is, directly.
Tell us about that. Tell us more about that.
Well, it was interesting. I read a lot of theology and sort of read a lot of kind of read the Bible quite frequently. It resonates a great deal with me, not necessarily on a religious level, but for other reasons. But at any rate, it was a really apt metaphor, I think, for this book and these people's, the sort of backdrop of their lives, which is the Great Migration, as you said. Certainly, it's not a book about the Great Migration, but it is an important part in understanding who they are. And I was interested in a metaphor that would kind of talk about a group of people who were eventually going to found a nation, but then kind of when we meet them, they are not a nation yet, so it's sort of nascent in them. And I was also interested in this notion of movement from a situation of kind of bondage and difficulty into a situation of freedom, in which, however, that freedom is a great deal more muddled and complicated than they anticipated it being, which is, of course, exactly what the case is with the characters in the novel.
Well, Hatti has 12 children, and it certainly seems she's quite bound by them, not free at all.
She is. I mean, she is, certainly. But she loves them very, very fiercely. And I don't think that she thinks of her children as any kind of bondage. I think that she thinks of other circumstances in her life as you know, her economic situation and to some extent the racial situation at the time. There are all kinds of sort of class constraints and she's in a difficult marriage. So I think that she feels a great deal more sort of hemmed in by those circumstances than she does by her children per se.
One of the chapters deals with her relationship with a man named Lawrence. Yeah. Talk about that.
That she's in a difficult marriage. She and her husband really love each other, but they have a very, very, his name is August, her husband, a very, very complicated love. It's very complicated and often doesn't look like love, but I think that it is. But it's a certain point, another man kind of comes into Hattie's life and she essentially runs off with him. She also has a child with him and, she decides ultimately that she's not going to be with this man and not going to stay with this man in some ways because he's kind of a lot probably like her husband, you know, and I think she sort of gets to the point of thinking, you know, the devil, you know, is better than the one you don't. But certainly he provides kind of a moment of really pure joy in her life, which is hers is not a life that's characterized by a great deal of pure joy.
How did you decide to craft this book where you move through time with the chapter on each of the children?
I was writing short stories. I didn't, the novel came out of some short stories that I was writing. I wasn't aware of sort of beginning a novel. But I got about three or four stories in and I realized that they were in the same family. And I was interested in those decades. So, I was writing as they are now in the novel, you know, there will be, a title of a chapter, for example, the first chapter is called Philadelphian Jubilee and then 1925. That those year tags came later because I was aware of sort of writing chronologically, kind of moving up through time and writing in different periods. But the sort of tags of the years didn't come until later because it began to seem that it would be a great big jumble for a reader if there wasn't something to very clearly demarcate what year we were in. But I was very interested. I started being interested, I thought, sort of exclusively in the 40s and 50s, but as I wrote further and further into the novel, it became apparent that the stories were also taking place in other times and that they were going to have to reach back to Hattie's very, very young years. So thus the first chapter starts in 1925 and that the last child, who is her grandchild, not her child, would have to be in 1980 because I wanted it to kind of, I realized it needed to sort of span the greater part of the 20th century and I wanted it to kind of span, though very specific historical movements are not mentioned directly, like this, there's no direct mention of the civil rights movement or things like that, that all of those things were very much almost sort of implicit for me as I was writing. And so I wanted it to kind of begin well before and end well after.
I was interested to read that Six, one of Hattie's sons, wonders what his life would have been like had his parents stayed in the South. Mm. He described the North as cold and colorless and called the people desperate. Did you ever contemplate what your life would have been like had your parents, had your people not come North?
Not at all. The South was not a part of my upbringing at all. Though my grandparents came from the South, they didn't talk about it. It wasn't. My mother was born in Philadelphia. I was born and raised in Philadelphia. So the South was sort of very removed from me or from my consciousness or from any sense of like, if what if they hadn't. It wasn't it, sort of not a part of the way I thought about my life or still do, really. I mean, certainly I think about the South more in different ways, you know, this novel and other ways. But it wasn't anything that I ever kind of personally wondered about, I don't think.
I think for many readers, the warmth of other sons sort of opened the door to our consciousness about the Great Migration.
Sure, absolutely. It's a seminal work, you know. It's incredibly important. And a movement that is oddly and kind of ridiculously unknown since it changed not just the United States. I mean, certainly it changed what the United States looks like. It changed it, you know, geographically. It changed it culturally. It changed it kind of in all ways.
When Oprah read your book, she said, "The opening pages of Ayana's debut took my breath away. I can't remember when I read anything that moved me in quite the same way besides the work of Toni Morrison."
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite a compliment.
You know, I often wonder, does her staff, you know, do a first reading and then give her some that they liked? How does the book move up into her hands?
Well, the books department at O Magazine does an awfully lot of work. The book's editor is a woman named Lee Haber now. And I mean, she and her team read an astounding amount of work. And then they narrow it and then it goes to Oprah, who also reads an awfully lot, but she's not necessarily reading. I mean, they're reading like, you know, the slush pile, you know, they're reading just hundreds of manuscripts and galleys. And she's obviously not reading that much, but she's reading a lot.
So are you already at work on your next project?
I've kind of been traveling for the better part of a year, so not really. I have an idea, but there's been no time to write really since the book came out.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a great pleasure.